and turns, man, I don't blame you. I said, listen, I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man.
And also, I mean, yes, and also, honestly, cool.
Welcome to barnstorming.
Yeah, welcome to barnstorming. Yet again, we've solved everything. So we're really thrilled to have a new guest here. I'll let him introduce himself in a moment. But just quick overview. We're going to do our quick little intros. We'll do some housekeeping, and then we'll hear more from Jontel Toland. And then we're going to change up a little bit how we do our headlines. And we have a new game that I designed, very excited about. So that's the plan for today. I'm Jordy Comis. I'm one of the producers and hosts of Barnstorming PA. And today I'm going to wear my I grew up in East Tennessee hat. Taylor?
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Taylor Lightman. I am a co-producer along with Jordy. And I grew up in Lewisburg. And now I live in Sweden. And I just graduated from Lund's University with a master's in disaster risk management and climate change adaptation. Quick plug, I did a podcast with Sam in October about the Swedish response to climate change, to coronavirus. And you can listen to that on Radio Free Lewisburg.
I think that's now on all fine podcasting platforms, isn't it? It's no longer just on the website.
I believe it is.
That's my understanding. And I just got to say this because I love it. Taylor is a master of disaster.
Right. Yeah, I think he was trying to avoid saying it again because, you know, you don't want to have that every episode.
I don't mind, but go ahead, Nathan.
Of course. I'm Nathan Lund. I'm a political consultant working out of Harrisburg who recently signed on to the Dave Shangweiler campaign for mayor. And the hat that I'll wear in addition to that is that I'm a native Michigander. So that's how it goes. And then we can throw it over to Jontel, who's the special guest for this episode.
Yes. Hi everyone. I'm Jontel E. Toland. Host of my own show called The Leon Block, where I interview a number of different guests about a number of different topics centered around Black empowerment. I am also a new resident of Lancaster City. I moved here homeless, living out of my car 2 years ago, and I am now running for city council. I was a big part of the Black Lives Movement locally, and so they're going to have to deal with a lot of me coming up.
Wow, that's amazing, Jontel. We're gonna hear more about your story. Wow, really plugging the you've got a great shirt, Equality, Inclusion, Diversity, Kindness Spells Love. And then what was the mug? Can you hold it up again? Because it looked it was pluggable.
This is one of my mantras as well. Go forth and be awesome.
That's great. I know you had the show that I heard, the Leon Block, which is your streaming live show where you interview people. You had Brian Sims, and he said something. Shoot. What was it that was so good? It was sort of a short aphorism. I'm not going to remember it, but the other one I remember that I loved was he was talking about his colleagues in the Capitol, the other legislators. Do you remember this? And he said, look, the most common occupation is small business person, which means that they moved to the Capitol because they weren't very good at their business. Like they didn't grow. And I was like, whoa, he never holds back.
No, he doesn't.
So that actually surprised me. I would have guessed lawyer, but maybe that's only at the federal level.
That is surprising.
Yeah. So that's excellent. So a couple of housekeeping things. I should have mentioned this before we started, Jontel, but in the chat on Zoom, we'll use that just for kind of notes to ourselves. Don't feel like, you know, I know you do your own show on that platform, but sometimes we've had guests or me like read it and respond. So you don't need to do that. So you can listen to our podcast. Well, you're listening to it now, but you can always check out the website, barnstormingpa.org. It's getting upgrades that are slowly coming out. Season 4, we'll have an official launch date with a whole bunch of new things at some point. Yes. And, do you happen to remember the survey link for the listener survey, Taylor?
No, I don't, but we'll link it in the show notes.
Yes.
And Jontel's podcast link will be in the show notes.
Yes. You
can check that out there, the Leon Block.
Yes. We want to thank
our listener survey.
Please fill out our listener survey. I did look around, you know, and our top two episodes are over 5,000 listens. So something's happening out there, which is pretty exciting. Want to thank Billy Kelly. We haven't in a while, but if you like our intro and outro music, that's from Billy Kelly, who's a comedian and a musician in Lewisburg. As he likes to say, he's Lewisburg's most important Grammy losing artist, because he was nominated for a Grammy and didn't win. So that's a little taste of his humor. And we haven't done this in a while, but, you know, we'll give a shout out to Mondragon Bookstore in Lewisburg. Recently moved to a new location.
They recently moved to their new location, and their old location was at 11 Market Street. But their new location, what is the name? Or
I don't know the exact address. It's in Lewisburg between 4th and 5th on the north side. It's also a framing gallery. So Winnie Foreman and...
Well, it splits the store,
but it's much more, much big with the Open Door Gallery. Thank you. Winnie Foreman runs the Open Door. Sarah Jane Snyder, both of them.
430 Market Street. And Jordy, do you know what that is in binary?
I think it stands for Anarchist Cooperative. I think that's what it spells in binary.
Not exactly, but but close.
But close. store credit. Does it spell store credit?
No, not that.
This is an ancient callback to like season one stuff. So Nathan and Jontel, you're
it used to be 111 Market Street, and Jordy and I would always riff on.
And binary, that spells freedom or something. So excellent. So that's where we are. Am I forgetting any other housekeeping stuff? Jontel, do you want to go ahead and say we said the Leon Block, but is there like a Facebook, or it's on Facebook? How can people find you?
Yes, the Leon Block is on Facebook and YouTube. You can literally just search Leon Block. It should come up on both.
Do you want to, I'm going to turn it over to you, but I don't, you know, you told me the story about the name, the origin. Do you want to go into that now, or do you want to, it's kind of, you're up on deck here. So whatever direction you want to take it.
Yeah, sure. Last year with, you know, Black Lives Matter, the movement and everything, towards the end of the year, my grandfather caught COVID, took a turn for the worse. Now it's just kind of like he's been in and out the hospital. He gets really sick and then he's great all out of nowhere. So to me, that's a testament to how strong he is, how resilient he is. I look up to him. He's my hero. His name is James Leon Toland. So his middle name I've always loved. And the early 2000s, he created this toy. There's multiple different styles of it, but it's basically like a huge puzzle maker, like 3D puzzle for young kids. But I mean, given the age that we're in, most kids don't want to play with 3D puzzles. So most, or if not all, toy companies, when he tried to, you know, shop around to present it to them, he kept getting shot down. So I just wanted to do like a nice little play on the toy, but also his name, to honor him, but also something that I can constantly like remind myself of how proud of me he is, and how I am trying to do whatever I can to do my part to educate the masses and make a difference in the world. For me, it's through empowerment of, you know, knowledge, education, having discussions, having a sense of community with your brothers and sisters within the greater Black community. And so to me, the words, the Leon Block, speaks to all of that. I try to make it as inclusive as possible. I try to make it as interactive as possible. Anyone can pretty much have anything to say as long as it's respectable. I encourage, you know, having different points of view and actually debating about things as long as you're learning something. I think that's what's most important. And that's what, at the core, what I'm all about is having very important but very passionate discussions at the end of the day.
That's great. So you said he's doing sort of okay now, or his health?
Yeah. So for the past month, maybe, he's been doing pretty great. Like, he got out the hospital, My grandma set up a little hospital bed for him in the living room so he could just like chill. And so that was great. And then now he's back in the hospital. But honestly, he's been in and out the hospital so freaking much that like, I'm just like, oh yeah, okay. Like he's in a hospital. Okay. Let me know when he's back home kind of thing.
Yeah. So not to pry too much. Is it all COVID like long haul things or?
Yeah, it's COVID. He had a long history of being a smoker, so it's and he's stubborn as heck. Mm-hmm. So right when he first caught COVID, he would not give up cigarettes, and he was still like sneaking cigarettes. So like that didn't help. And he kept getting pneumonia in between. So you know, it's
yeah, I hear it's,
yeah.
My father was a like 3-pack-a-day smoker, and he was also a cancer physician. But he actually, I think it helped him sometimes. I don't know if Taylor's heard this story, but he was an immigrant from Spain, so he had this kind of thick accent. But he would take his patients. This was in Tennessee, like I said, where I grew up, and he'd say like, "Well, you know, it doesn't look good, but why don't we go outside and smoke a cigarette and talk about it?" And I think like a lot of his patients appreciated that he wasn't like talking down to them. Yeah. Anyway, if you don't mind, I'm curious. So you said you moved to Lancaster from Harrisburg. Is that where your grandfather, is that where he and his wife reside now?
Interestingly enough, my grandfather was born in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Oh.
Yes. My great grandmother, we called her Mother Dear, his mother. She moved from Chattanooga to Philly, and my grandfather was young. He was maybe like 10 or 11 at that point. She gave him up for adoption because she couldn't really like sustain raising him at the time. So he and my aunt, my great aunt, his older sister, they grew up in Philly, and then ended up getting shipped off to Coatesville, where they ended up graduating from high school and everything. Once they were adults, they got reunited with my grandmother, my great grandmother, when she moved to Coatesville finally. So yeah, I do have roots in Tennessee actually.
Wow. That's actually,
I do too as well. So,
that's right. That's right. Taylor's family's from Memphis. And, you know, I don't know the exact numbers, but generally that part of East Tennessee, Chattanooga, Knoxville, they would have been a little unusual. Like they didn't historically have the kind of African-American population that other parts of the South.
You Easterners.
Well, you know, that is the part of Tennessee that wanted to fight with the Union. That's why they're called the Volunteers. You know, I don't want to sugarcoat this. I'm not sure that they were like abolitionists. I think they just hated rich white people. I mean, maybe some of them were. I don't. It would be interesting to know what the motivations were. But there was a volunteer division that fought for the North that was from East Tennessee.
I thought that was about the Alamo.
Both. They were all Scotch-Irish who just wanted to fuck around with somebody. Right. Those people from the borderlands between Scotland and Ireland who are all like clan based. This is not my heritage because like my family were transplants to Tennessee. Like I said, my dad was an immigrant. My mom's from the Midwest. So I can't really sort of claim a lot of this. I'm pretty sure, Taylor, I can go double check. So,
yeah, I will. I'm not up on
anyway,
the history.
Anyway. So Jontel, so that's like, I'm already like, your biography is so interesting. And, you know, I think in that time period, the thing about adoption, like it was not unusual, right? Like
right.
People didn't have the resources and,
but I want you to continue, Jontel. So where do you like, does your family just stay in Coatesville and like the Philly area? Or cause you said you were originally from Wilkes-Barre.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Coatesville up until I was 13. And then I moved to Wilkes-Barre, 9th grade. And so I spent my teenage years and my early adulthood years in Wilkes-Barre. For 15 years, I think I lived, 12 years, I think I lived in Wilkes-Barre. And then I moved to Scranton. But in the middle of that, like
big change.
Once I left high school, I kind of.
And now Wilkes-Barre, I'm going to Scranton.
Dude, I've lived all over Northeast PA, New Angola, Pittston, Old Forge, Scranton, Kingston, you name it. Like, I've lived all over Northeast PA, and I have a big Northeast PA I hold near and dear to my heart. Like, it's just a place that is not like the rest of the world. It's like its own little bubble. And, you know, people can have their own things to say about it, but I love them. I'm a huge PA pride person in general, but Northeast PA I absolutely love. But my family is actually spread out all over the U.S. My grandfather kind of got around. My grandmother is actually his second marriage. His first marriage is actually, she passed away from cancer, and then he met my grandmother and they got married. While he was in the Army, physically away from my grandmother, he was in Florida and in California stationed. He had, you know, some affairs. And so I have cousins and aunts and uncles like all over the U.S.
Wow. So I'm still so interested. The puzzle thing, was he always like a tinkerer? This is partly because I love board games and things like that. You know, was he like somebody who was handy with his hands? Or like my grandfather was the kind of guy who, you know, would never call a repair person, wanted to fix everything himself.
So, like, my family, I can have stories for days, but yeah. So
we only have an hour.
So my grandfather, yes, he's very much that kind of person. Like, our family homestead, right, it sits on a hill over top of Coatesville, and they moved there. So Coatesville is known for having the Underground Railroad, like, go right through it, basically. And because it's a huge steel mill town, a lot of African Americans coming from the South up north settled in Coatesville because of the cheap, the jobs that was there, and it was great money. Over time, you know, the years of white flight here in Coatesville, we had a lot of Black families being able to settle in the suburbs of Coatesville and buy their own plots of land and have, you know, great wealth. And so in the late 70s, the neighborhood that my grandparents now live in became pretty integrated. By the time they moved in the 80s, it was pretty much all Black. And from the time they moved into this house and this property, which it's phenomenal. I love our family homestead. He just continued to build and build and build on it. So he built like an upstairs. It was like an attic. He built two rooms up there with like a little balcony. He built two decks on the outside, like a front and back porch. He built a 3-door garage with an apartment over top. My grandfather and my grandmother both would do like different projects together. Like my grandmother was always like the crafty yarn person who would always knit things and do little hats for my grandfather and his friends and all kinds of things like that. My grandfather started this organization around town, helping particularly young men, but everyone at large. It was called Can I Help You? So they were like a community-based organization to do community-based things. He also opened up a little candy store where kids, particularly Black high school kids, after school had somewhere they could go, shoot pool. He would put like pictures of HBCU grads up on the wall and like Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, things for them to aspire to. So like he was very involved in his community as well. So like this is part of why I greatly looked up to him, even though like, you know, he had his bad boy side of things, but he also had his really great troublemaker side of things as well, if you know what I mean.
Good trouble.
Because I would say that you've been politicized, but do you consider his actions to be like political? Like, do you consider yourself to be like the first like politician in the family, politically involved person?
Yeah. I think so. The way that my grandfather was, you know, they, I grew up always having the news on. Like, my grandparents, like, I was raised by a single mom. So, like, my grandparents were, like, my second parents. Like, they basically raised me, too. Yeah, it was basically like there was always news around. I was always kind of taught to soak up information, but it was never to the far point of encouraging me to get into politics. It was just more or less learn everything that you can, make sure you learn something new every day.
Right. And your formative years were really split up between a bunch of different places, you know, a bunch of different influences, cultural, political, everything. Even if what he was doing wasn't politics, it still had some implications for the potential, and that helped inform who you are. So how did you end up in Lancaster and now running for city council?
Yeah, of course. So I, my mother decided to move to North Carolina. I was kind of stuck up in Northeast PA by myself. Like, I had family up there, but I just kind of felt like, okay, I want to go back to Coatesville, get in touch with my roots, get in touch with my family more, build more familial connections, if you will. And so Coatesville is not at the, even still currently, I will be just very forthright, that Coatesville is not a place that you can typically grow right now. And I was looking for, being that Wilkes-Barre and Scranton are bigger cities compared to Coatesville, and I had such a wealth of friends, and in Coatesville I wasn't really getting anywhere at all. There's not really anything there connection-wise. I was working at Urban Outfitters, made a lot of great friends that were immigrants to this country, and I made a lot of great connections to people that kept encouraging me to move to Lancaster, that opportunity there, compared to Coatesville, where Coatesville is one poor city of color surrounded by the highest wealth of demographic by county in the state. So it was just kind of like, it's kind of like a big bubble, and Lancaster was something that I kind of did stumble upon, even though I did have aspirations to always move there. Since 2016, I kind of just actually stumbled upon, and it took me by storm. It wasn't until George Floyd happening last year that Lancaster government and politics really became on my radar as something that I really became really heavily interested in. Was I always aware of like what was going on in Lancaster? Yes, but it wasn't until last year that I'm like, there's some nefarious things and some corruption going on that I personally think that I could, that I want to have a hand in helping to change.
Right. Yes. Nice. I mean, that sounds like you're getting in it for the right reasons to me.
What are your, like, if you are elected? Oh, actually, yeah. I was asking you this in the run up. What's your competition like?
Yeah. So, I think a lot of people, as I'm speaking to different people that are running right for office now across Pennsylvania, what I'm getting from them is that like they're either their competition or their voter population tends to be more majority or more diverse or more homogeneous as far as Caucasian. And what I'm uniquely facing here in Lancaster is that my running mates are all people of color. And two of the candidates are also a part of the LGBT community, as well as myself. And Lancaster is a city of, has a great population of Latinx communities. And so we have six candidates running, right? Three incumbent, three newcomers. Three of those.
For how many seats?
Latinx. There's four seats. So six people vying for four seats, three incumbent, three newcomer.
And how many people will make it out of the primary? Four?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I, in my eyes, it's a pretty tight race. Like I, one of my competitors is, Afro Latinx, LGBTQ as well. So, it's not like we all have like, completely different spheres to work under. We're all kind of overlapping in some way. So I find that quite interesting compared to like the rest of Pennsylvania I'm hearing so far.
Wow. So, what did those six folks kind of all emerge? Well, the three incumbents wanted to run again. Did the three newcomers, each person kind of, do you know, arrived at the decision to run on their own, or were you all in communication with each other? Was there like, cause sometimes, you know, progressive movement will be like, hey, we want to run a bunch of people.
No, actually, I think I am the sole representative of the latest progressive movement in Lancaster. And so there is a newcomer that is born and raised here who I think is kind of like a silent voice for the community, whether he realizes it or not. And then there's someone who is relatively unheard. We are the three newcomers. And then the three incumbents, one is the president, who is a black man, and he's very well known here. And then the other two, one is a black woman, the other one is a Latina woman, and she's kind of well known at this point because she ran against Scott Martin, who is the PA state representative for this district, and she lost against him. So Lancaster's I just want to give a little tidbit here. Lancaster's population is roughly 60,000, and about half of that are people of color, immigrants, African-American, Latinx community. So we have a huge population to play up to or to speak for. Even though I am a newcomer, being involved in the Black Lives Matter movement last year, I definitely think does speak to a lot of people. There's a lot of different organizations here in the community. A lot of them do a lot of great work and have a diverse makeup in those organizations. I am working close with an organization. I just applied for local organizer position with them and just like cross my fingers that I get this job. Because Lancaster Stands Up is an organization that has a reputation here locally for being a almost exclusively white organization that has very great, very positive intentions for things they want to do here in the community. But they're just not getting, their message is not getting across because of their makeup. And I am seeking to change that. I see great potential in our organization, and I really want to do something with them that really connects with the people, but also especially connects with the people of color, people of color here in the city. So, yeah, you tomorrow night.
Yeah, well, we can, yeah, I know there's a lot of intersecting things here because obviously
yeah.
I'm very involved with the Hub for Progress, and we've been working to build more capacity for Black Lives Matter, racial justice, you know, the different ways that the uprising last summer will transition into more durable kinds of ongoing organizing. So you do want to talk about that, but if you want to, you know, I think your whole campaign, you know, maybe we can do another more of kind of like a candidate spotlight pretty soon. But do you want to say any more about some issues you're running on or anything else about your campaign?
Yeah, sure. So a big reason why I got into this is, I mean, I've been homeless a few times in my life. I've struggled with being without shelter here in Lancaster. When I first moved here, and just very recently, and given, you know, the current climate with the pandemic, and the current climate of gentrification, specifically here in Lancaster City. It's a big issue here. If you come to Lancaster City and you drive around downtown, all you see are affluent white people walking around shopping amongst and over top, almost stepping over top of poor and homeless people that clearly need help to various degrees. Drugs and addiction are a huge problem here in the county at large, not just the city. So that is a big issue that we do need to discuss. And the criminalization of homelessness and gentrification, they're all intersecting issues, obviously. But also policing, police and citizen relations are a big problem here. Last year, we had a young man who was 24, who was bipolar and suffered from mental issues. And I can relate because I'm also bipolar and suffer from mental issues. And I saw myself in that situation. Like, he, his mother was trying to calm him down. She called the police seeking help to you know, mediate the situation, and they asked no questions. The guy came out of the house, boom, 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 shot him dead in the chest. And so there was no mediation for the situation, and so we're looking for better relations between the police and citizens when it comes to mental health situations, just like a bunch of other cities are across the nation. And then my other big platform that I think is important is that here in Lancaster City, as I said, it's a city of 60,000 people, 30,000 or more are people of color, and we're not really represented when it comes to the small businesses. Downtown, you'll drive around or walk around, and again, you'll see tons of affluent white people patronizing these businesses, but they're all white businesses for the most part. We do have some businesses of people of color all around, you know, the hood areas, but they're out of necessity, being that they're food deserts. We don't have anything to showcase, like, pride in our respective cultures, if you will. And I think that that is something important that we could really capitalize on. One thing that Lancastrians have a sense of pride in is our diverse communities and how we come from so many different walks of life. Well, we need to capitalize on that. We need to really show the rest of the world, if we're like one of the best small cities in the country, like we have been a few times, let's actually showcase that. Let's actually really show that and show pride in that. And so that is those are big reasons why I am running for city council, but also most importantly for visibility. I think it's important for our communities here in Lancaster City, but abroad, to see someone that they see in themselves running, so that they can have the motivation and encouragement to do it themselves. And that's actually something that I am going to touch on tomorrow night at our meeting.
Okay. Go for it. Okay. Oh, you're trying to take a sip. I appreciate you, sharing all of these pieces of these threads of your story. And, you know, I was thinking, I think you said, you know, running to be visible. And what was popping in my head is, you know, you're lighting not a candle that's too small, but like a big, you know, torch, and shining a path for a lot of people who could relate to you in so many ways, whether it's, you know, the life story, the homelessness, being a member of the LGBTQ queer community, being somebody who's, coping with mental health. I mean, you know, you're not the kind of person a Democratic consultant would pick to run.
Right. Not at all. But
but the kind of person we need to run.
Right. Let me ask you this, though. Was Trump the kind of person that any of us would have elected to office?
Did we?
We certainly did.
There was this longing for something better, right? Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We all want someone that we can relate to, yet we always still tend to vote for someone that is like the other, like that is not anything like us. And I think that personally, like, I'm someone that is extremely relatable. And do I think that I'm going to be someone that people necessarily, like, in their minds saw themselves voting for? Maybe not. But I also think that I'm going to stoke that question in their minds. Like, well, a lot of people took a chance on that loony bin. I'm not a loony bin, but like I'm definitely someone that is more relatable.
I actually just really like to see the increasing vulnerability among politicians. Like you have AOC recently talking about her trauma and how it was like triggering for her to deal with that. And to talk about those things, I think is just so important because so many people relate on these issues, but they don't feel like they're able to talk about it because of all of the various stigmas that intersect and make us feel so small and insignificant. So when you see that people in power go through some of these same things, and that means that those perspectives are being represented, whether it's on city council or in the halls of Congress, I just think it's such a powerful thing. So I'm glad to see you and AOC, if you don't mind the grouping, is rising stars.
Honestly, when I saw that, it made me feel really great because I'm not saying like she's my model for success, but in a sense she is. And she's breaking down those stereotypes and knocking down those barriers. And I want her to continue to do that because I'm following in those footsteps and trying to do the same thing. And I've grappled with that going into this. Like, you know, are there things that I should be forthright with and just come out the forefront with and say, like, this is me, this is how I am, I'm not holding back, I'm not hiding anything, like, I don't have anything to hide right off the bat, I don't. But there are things that I'm going to be very forthright with, and she's a big part in, like, deciding those things. Like, okay, I don't have to not talk about this just because people don't want to hear that from a politician. What do people want from a politician these days? I don't think they really know. I think the idea of that is changing dramatically with the climate. So I think it's time for us to test and push those boundaries, just as we're testing those boundaries now by electing more people that do look more like us, that do sound more like us, that actually are thinking about the things that we're thinking about, like Nina Turner, like Cori Bush and AOC. These are the people that we would see on a regular basis. And so if they continue to push that envelope, hopefully, you know, at least like 10 years from now, we will have a completely different perspective politicians sound like and actually mean to us.
Jontel, how can people find out more about your campaign?
Okay, so I currently have a Facebook page up, Jontel Toland for City Council. And you could just search that. That is the current platform that I have up at the moment. And I share little tidbits of things, you know, just little reasons as to why I'm running bit by bit. I'm slowly, you know, revealing things as I go along. But right now, that is the sole platform that you can find more information on me on at the moment.
We were talking about this a little bit ahead of recording, and the snowstorm really put a wrench into a lot of the operations for people. So he's trying to get, you know, to his treasurer so that he can actually take in funds and then spend money, because when you can't spend money, it's hard to have a website and do all those other things while, you know, crossing your T's and dotting your I's.
So we've had so much fun. Talking about things. I think Jontel, we might, you know, maybe just 30 seconds what you're going to do tomorrow night, but we're not, you know, I don't think that this podcast probably has a real driving effect on the attendance on the Thursday night.
About a week ago now, to this day, I heard about a really awesome individual that now I'd like to call a hero, that, and also an inspiration for, as far as visibility, why I'm running for the council. And their name is Pauli Murray. And it's an individual I'm going to be touching on tomorrow to really showcase why I am running for city council. But they were involved in a lot of things within Black history, particularly around the civil rights movement, major legislation for the civil rights movement, and betterment of women and people of color all around. And they actually were definitely a part of the LGBT community way before, you know, that was something that we
offered. Awesome. I think there's also, Jontel told me, I think, or somebody did, that Democracy Now! Has been highlighting Pauli Murray So people can go there to find more information. And if you hear this and you want to know about the regional roundtable, the Black Lives Matter regional roundtable that Gentile's going to be leading, you know, you can reach out to us. You can email info@thehub4progress.org. So thehub4progress.org, info@.
I believe Daryl also has a Facebook event for it. So maybe we can put that in the show notes.
Great idea.
Yeah, somebody sent that to me. We'll put it in. I guess maybe Jordy.
I have it. Yeah, I'm doing the post
production. Okay. All right. Great. Gentile, I can't wait to see your name on the ballot. And if I could vote for you, I would. And I'll follow your campaign. And I wish you the best. Thank you for running. It's really important that people like you are stepping up and trying to change things.
Thank you, Taylor. I appreciate and cherish positivity.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So shall we do the headlines? We're doing it a little bit different this time. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Does somebody want to explain it? I don't know if I understand it well enough to...
I don't know if I do either.
I'll set it up.
Okay, go ahead. Okay. Go ahead, Nathan.
That means that maybe I can change it. I'm setting the rules now. So I believe what we talked about in the pre-show talk was that we're going to have headlines that are oriented towards the future. And they should be positive, but we're kind of curmudgeons sometimes, so they'll probably have some negativity to them in the crosstalk. But what we're going to do is take something that's currently happening and then extend it out into the future and provide a headline that's positive, if we can stretch that muscle.
So it's a headline of something that's going on right now, and then like zooming forward, the repercussions of that.
Basically, yeah.
Okay, well, I want to go not first.
Not first?
Nathan, why don't you go first, and then I have something I can go.
Okay. Important, not important, but useful to note that we started recording this at about noon on Wednesday, February 3rd, which was almost immediately after the governor's budget address.
Yes, he really did throw some interesting things out there.
He did. So I'm only going to focus on the school portion, though. So my headline is that Pennsylvania students enjoy unprecedented success following 2021 budget reforms. So that's my positive headline. And I believe that if we went with the fair funding formula that Wolf has been trying to push, a bunch of other groups have been trying to push for years now, if we can switch to that, then there can be way more of the opportunity that Gentile has been talking about, just allowing people to be excellent because they have equitable access to quality, high quality education, which is completely within our grasp for Pennsylvania, and it's a sham that we don't have it right now. So Pennsylvania students enjoy unprecedented success following the 2021 budget reforms, which will definitely pass through the House and Senate after Governor Wolf put it out there so eloquently.
Nice. Do you want to? Are there specific things? I mean, he's putting a lot of money into schools. Does he have any thoughts on how best to use it?
There's a lot of breakdown if you go into the policy, but for me, the main thing is just that, like, it's not about throwing money at an issue. It's about equalizing the funding. So right now we just have too many disparities between schools to where, like, you don't even have the same programs being offered. So like right now you have to where, like, it's federally mandated, right, that you have to have like accessibility in education, but that doesn't mean that all those programs are funded equally. So you can, if you're going to school in Lebanon versus going to school in Philadelphia, you get vastly different quality of education as like a special needs learner. And of course, that's just like an extreme example, but there are so many different needs across different communities that have different socioeconomic strata that are attending their schools, right? So it's so many different things that go into it, but I just want to see the schools equalized. And that's what the fair funding formula seeks to do.
Yeah, we have a habit of cutting education funding, both for K through 12 and like pre-K, but also like higher ed during recessions and for austerity measures, and then never restoring the funding.
Right.
And it would be great to, like, if we were still paying the same level for higher education in Pennsylvania that we were 30 years ago or 40 years ago, mm-hmm. it would be nearly free.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. That lawsuit, I don't know all the ins and outs, but there's this lawsuit that's been moving through the Pennsylvania courts about unequal funding. And I don't remember the exact numbers, but you know, Pennsylvania does very poorly when you measure things like relative inequality. I did see that one Republican, his first answer was rebuttal was something like, the governor wants to put more money per pupil. We already spend, I think you said like something like 17,000 per pupil. The national average is 13,000. I'm not really sure that that may sort of cause people's heads to turn a little bit, but you know, the national average, I mean, that includes a lot of states that are vastly underfunding, yeah. and it doesn't address cost of living differences. And,
when Jeff Bezos walks into a room, the average wealth goes up by billions.
Yeah. There's that too.
We don't want to be competing with some of those states that underfund their schools to try and pay less per pupil. So yeah, I agree. The national average is just a meaningless metric when you're not coupling it with quality of education.
I mean, the smart
and wouldn't you want like, we live in this world, like, wouldn't you want to just like heavily invest in education to like make your youth like compete on a very high level?
So,
you know, like why aren't we why do we strive for the average?
So it would be interesting to do a couple a longer thing on like what, because I think Nathan said something important, which is there is just a basic equity issue. And I think it's important to defuse that even if this happens, that tomorrow you're going to see school districts with poorer students and or more BIPOC students like immediately do better. And this can get a bit dicey because it can sound like, looking at educational outcomes that you're blaming the community, you're blaming individuals. I mean, my master's degree in sociology was about school finance and equity. And it's been a while, but like generally, those things can be pretty stubborn numbers. So I think actually it's important to talk about equity, not about like, you know, this sort of very neoliberal, like, oh, well, they're not getting high grades, therefore there's a problem. But I mean, off the top of my head real quick, sorry, you know, the things that make a difference is to buy more teachers and shrink class size. And the other thing would be to create more pathways into teaching for, or not even necessarily teaching, put more loving adults in the building, right? Those are the key things.
Yeah, I agree. And on your community note, I think that it is important because like things as diverse as like lead poisoning, right, can affect educational outcomes. So when you're looking at the environments that people live in when they're not within the four walls of a school, like that also matters. And it's not about blaming the community. It's about realizing that the system does not favor them.
Yeah. It's just like complete disinvestment in our community.
Chantel, you want to jump in with anything here?
Yeah, so communities of color and poor communities obviously are disproportionately affected. But, you know, looking ahead, let's say things were more equitable across the board, right? What I'm seeing are like, you know, give it like a few years, but let's say like a decade out, I could see like, we already know how population is going to go. So like a decade from now, we're going to be tons of BIPOC students graduating, but I could see a lot more, college and university levels and trade school levels, like increasing tenfold, you know, that's what I'm looking at. Just the amount of success for our country that could happen at the hands of, you know, like DACA kids, you know. It just makes me, that makes me gush inside.
Yeah.
So here's mine. I'm not sure I quite followed the instructions, but it's something like this. There'd be a headline somewhere year or two out that would say something like this, the 5,000th or new organic farms in PA in the last 5 years hit 5,000 new farms. The reason for that is the tie into today is Biden signed some executive orders that did a couple of things around food insecurity. And I imagine we've all heard the numbers and may also know people directly impacted, but it's somewhere like 1 in 5 or 1 in 7 when they ask people about food insecurity are facing that, the highest numbers as usual in this in the part of America that's a hellscape in among poorer families and communities of color. So Biden's executive order, you know, it's a good start. It extends the program that provides food support for kids who would normally be getting school lunch, but aren't because of COVID school closures. It extends SNAP benefits to more families that Trump had limited it to. And the third thing it does is something called the Thrifty Food Plan, which, can be a good thing. I have a little bit of mixed feelings from a little bit I read because it's an FDA program or Department of Agriculture, I think, program. But it's one of these things that's based on how much money should a poor family spend on food and then building like a basket of food. But there's some things about it.
I don't like those at all. I think that's a terrible idea. I think you give people money and let them make their own decisions.
Well, it doesn't tell them what to buy, Taylor. It's just the amount of money is based on what they're imagining they would buy it on. Okay. So it's not,
it's not the food box. Cause Trump wanted to give people a food box.
No. But the issue with the Thrifty Food Plan, it's an imaginary basket. And so the amount of money people get is based on this imaginary basket, but
I misunderstood,
but that's okay. But one of the problems with it is that it assumes that families will always get the lowest cost raw ingredients and make their own food. And you know, that's a real time and labor cost, you know, so why are you assuming that a single mom or a single father with a couple of kids who's working one or two jobs, you know, has time to, make beans from scratch, you know? So it's one of these things where we impose extra costs for being on the side of the economy where you're already getting screwed out of wages by the system. So it's good that that's there, the Thrifty Food Plan, because it expands food aid, but they should change the way they think about it is the key thing. So those are the good things that are there. Why the farm piece? And I'll do this really quick, but this kind of fits into something that, you know, Taylor and I have talked about, but imagining the rural patchwork as this prosperous, diverse set of interconnected networks. The average age of a farmer in the United States from Pennsylvania is in the 50s. Those farms keep getting bigger. We keep losing more and more farms in Pennsylvania. I said organic. I don't actually love that because organic by itself is often a barrier to entry. So I'd really prefer something that was a little bit looser that could come about that would be like, let's call them green farms in the short term. But basically things that smaller scale farmers can do that are about the climate and about soil preservation and all of that, right, to make a market for that. So you have several needs. We need to get young people into farming. We need farming that's on a somewhat smaller scale, but that's technologically robust, that's responsive to the climate, and all of that tied to local markets. So the executive order parts can help with that. These things like the Thrifty Food Basket, tying it just to school food. You know, to me, it's like crazy that we keep shortchanging kids. And one of the worst ways is we've outsourced food to these mega corporations that are just, you know, like
school lunches and stuff like that.
Yeah, but just cramming some calories down their throats.
The school lunch programs could be a fabulous,
amazing. And so you could last piece and then I'll hush, but like you also build in this sort of K-12 curriculum about food, how you eat, how you prepare food, bring kids into the kitchen, bring the community into the schools in the kitchen, bring the farmers in, you know, and this is not pie in the sky. France is amazing at this. Some other European countries, my own kids went to school in Spain for a year when we lived there. And I'll never forget that. We got a tour of this school and it was kind of the equivalent of a parochial school. It was sort of half private, half public. But like the most important thing to the school administrators to show us was the dining room and how the kids sat like family style at the tables with the oldest kids and the youngest kids, how they learned how to properly use a fork and a knife. Like it wasn't like finishing school for rich people. It was like, this is the basics of being a human, right? You must eat well. You must have enough time to eat.
Start with the outer fork.
Well, it was because this was a K-12 school. I mean, a K through fifth grade. So it was, you know, don't stick your hand in the garbanzos and ah. So
I
anyway.
Don't understand why we make kids pay for lunch. They have to legally be in the building for like 8 hours a day. Like, why on earth are we making them pay for food? Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I went on too long, but yeah, go ahead. That's my headline. 5,000th green farm. I'm going to call the 5,000th green farm in Pennsylvania.
Chantel, do you want to go? I'm going to do mine on the fly. I could do it now or later, whatever you want to do.
Oh, go ahead, bud.
I mean, do you have one ready? Because I think I need all the time I can.
mine was just really about seeing a lot of students do really well as far as schooling goes, and just really benefiting from it.
Union and the Central Susquehanna Valley is hoping to have a new community college that gets funded, and that would be a spectacular thing for the whole community. I hope that happens.
Is that your headline?
No, that's not my headline. Chantel, is that your headline?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Mine is about Biden's executive order about cars being all electric by 2035. Or is it something other? GM wants to be all electric by 2035. And I think Biden's plan is to have an all-electric fleet by sometime around then. I don't know.
He wants to replace the U.S. fleet.
Okay. Anyway, mine is just going to be about 10 years down the road, thinking about all of the people that will still be alive because they didn't have an adverse reaction to particulate matter, didn't have an asthma attack. You know, cars release such noxious chemicals into our air, and they damage people's health in really awful ways. And that's to speak nothing of the power plants, coal-fired power plants and natural gas fire power plants that release heavy metals and particulate matter and greenhouse gases into the air, and it kills people literally every year.
And they're not in the rich communities, just to know.
Yeah, that's true. Although, yeah, I don't know. They're, definitely.
I mean, here's something. So he didn't give a time frame for it, but it is a good idea to use the U.S. government fleet. And it includes that, like, 50% of the car's parts have to be made in the U.S. to really bolster. And this is one of these little facts I've tucked in my back pocket, but the U.S. commercial nuclear power industry was built by the Manhattan Project, right? I mean, all the research, which is the equivalent of $23 billion in today's dollars, was just given to the industry because the U.S. government wanted them to build plants that would generate plutonium so they could have it for their bombs. So, you know, this thing about like the free market is rarely one or the other, free or a market. But anyway, so why not? You know, like this is a great use of government to stimulate an industry and get it over some of those barriers to entry so that it can be more economically competitive.
What is your actual headline, Taylor?
Sorry, what? The actual headline?
Yeah. What's the headline that comes from?
Oh. Sorry. I don't know. I don't have anything snappy.
Electric engine plant opens in Williamsport.
Yeah. How about that? Did you guys know that in Pennsylvania, 36% of the electricity is nuclear?
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge amount.
It is huge. I didn't realize it was that high.
Yeah, it's very high. I would also like all of the dams to be gotten rid of on the Susquehanna.
Yeah. Should we wrap, or do you guys want to do the game real quick?
How long have we been going?
It'd be pretty
maybe
fast.
An hour.
Oh, how long we've been going? It's been about an hour.
Okay, maybe we. I don't know. Oh, we've been going long recently. Why don't we save the game for next time?
Okay.
Unless.
Does Chantel feel deprived?
I'm a.
Do you want to know what it is before you decide?
I want to know what it is before I decide.
Okay. All right.
So it's, I have some sort of tick in my brain when I hear majority, I think people are saying my Jordy. So I just, it's very egotistical of me.
It's Nicholas, your name.
That I am the majority. It's my Jordy. Yeah. My Jordy rules. Yeah. So it's a shameless. I don't know if there's IP laws about game formats, but
well, if there is, we've already broken it.
We've violated it many times. There's this great NPR show called Ask Me Another, which is a fun humor and game show. So they do this thing called This, That, or the Other. So I will give you an item, and there are three categories, and so it's This, That, or the Other category. So one category is Pennsylvania documentaries, a second is restaurants in Pennsylvania, and a third is bands from Pennsylvania. So I would throw one out, and then you guys get to
go. Okay.
All right.
I'm down.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. So
bands, restaurants, and what?
Documentaries.
All about Pennsylvania.
The restaurants are in Pennsylvania. The bands are from Pennsylvania. We're based in Pennsylvania. And the documentaries, so documentaries, bands, restaurants. Did I say all this? The documentaries are about Pennsylvania. The bands, maybe the members aren't from Pennsylvania, but where they were popular in this city or that city.
So and the rest,
I will tell you, the restaurants are actually all Philly because I found so many good names in Philly. I didn't need to go beyond that.
Okay. So are we all guessing and the winner yes. gets a the t-shirt or something?
Sure. Yeah. How is the t-shirts coming?
A t-shirt
coming?
That you already own.
Okay. So here's the first one. Middle Child. Is Middle Child a band from Pennsylvania, a restaurant, or a documentary about Pennsylvania? Middle
it's
Child.
It's a band.
He was so confident. It's a band. I'm going with it.
I'm going to say restaurant, just to be controversial.
Middle Child is a restaurant in Philadelphia. Apparently, it's like a retro luncheonette, but the toast and jam is Japanese milk bread with whipped ricotta. The Fogey, P-H-O-A-G-E, is a vegan marvel, and the So Long Sal is a wonder of the sandwich arts.
So oh, my go. God. Do you have an address? Because I want to try that. I'm a big foodie. I want to try
it's,
that out.
All I know is it's in Philly. But yes.
And what's it called again?
Middle Child.
Middle Child. I'm really going to check this out.
All right, next one. Tabula Rasa, like the, is that Latin or Italian? Tabula, T-A-B-U-L-A, Rasa, R-A-S-A.
Right.
That's also definitely slate. A restaurant.
Taylor says restaurant?
I say restaurant.
Nathan?
Documentary.
Chantel?
I want to say, I'm going to, fuck it, I'm just going to say restaurant.
Tabula Rasa was a post-hardcore math rock band from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's a good game, isn't it?
This is all a right. good game.
All right, next. You ready?
Because you would think tableau. I thought table. I know. I was like, definitely, yeah.
I was very devious. Okay, you guys ready? Yeah, here's the next one. Electric Love Muffin. Is that a documentary, a restaurant, or a band?
I'm going to say that is a band.
Oh, I was going to say band, too. Band.
Yeah, I was going to say band, but...
Unless it's a really funky restaurant.
I'm thinking could be an of interesting... a nice little cozy bakery, so I'm going to say restaurant.
Okay.
Electric Love Muffin is a Philadelphia-based hard rock band, hard rocking quartet of the late 80s that spiked the melodic thrash pop of the Replacements, Soulless Item, and other indie bands with touches of country western, classic rock, and progressive rock. I want to say...
What did I say? Did I say band?
It was a band.
We both said okay. band, yeah.
I do want to say, especially because it's February and it's whether we want Black History, Black Future, I tried to find bands that were more, you know, hip-hop R&B, but most of them were just somebody's name, and so they didn't work very well. Okay. Next is... Kafar, capital K, capital F-A-R, Kafar. Band, documentary, or restaurant?
I'm going to say documentary, but just because there has to be one, right?
I'm going to go with that as well. There should be at least one documentary.
Chantel?
I'm going with restaurant.
It is a restaurant in nice. Philly. Heads up, this all-day cafe from Cook and Solo, where daylight crowds swarm over the bakery cases, snatching up her chocolate arugula and Jerusalem-style bagels. I don't know what a Jerusalem-style bagel is. So you have to keep track of your own. You have to keep track of your own score, by the way. Okay, there's just four more. Next one, Foxcatcher. Documentary, restaurant, or band? Foxcatcher, one word.
Band.
Band? Chantel?
Band.
Restaurant.
It is a documentary.
What?
because there had to be one.
What's it about?
It's about that guy, the wrestler, the DuPont guy who had that wrestling like camp called Foxcatcher, and he was like weirdly like playing mind games with people. There was some famous Olympic wrestlers came out of it, but there was like mental abuse going on.
Sad.
Yeah. Okay. Next.
Okay.
Yeah. Hollerback. Is Hollerback a restaurant, a band, or a documentary?
Hollerback. I'm going to say restaurant again.
I'm going to say restaurant too.
I'm going to say band.
Hollerback is a documentary made in the mid-2000s about people who don't vote in the Lehigh Valley.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's cool. Have you seen it?
No, I've got so many things I want to see now. Okay, there's only two more, I think. Let's see. Yes, two more. Okay, this one. This is one of my favorites. Hungry Pigeon, like the bird pigeon. Hungry Pigeon. Band, restaurant, or documentary?
Band.
Band. Chantel?
Band.
Taylor?
Documentary.
It is a restaurant in Philly.
Oh my gosh. I was like, it can't be a restaurant because that's so easy.
Right. Yeah.
It's yes, it's some sort of bakery. The website wasn't up. I hope it's still around. Maybe it's not. Okay, last one.
I don't even know if that's a good name for a restaurant because like a hungry pigeon still
pigeons sound gross to me. Yeah, pigeons I think of with like, you know, you see them in cities, their feet have gotten warped from like toxic chemicals or something.
This sounds like a dog whistle to me. You don't like the urban birds?
Oh yeah. definitely. They're, you know, they bring all the crime.
the worst thing about fancy restaurants is there's never enough food.
Yeah.
And okay, I imagine the fancy pigeon to be, or not the fancy pigeon, the hungry pigeon.
Here's the last one.
They give
one.
You like a huge plate with like a bite-sized piece of salmon on it.
Like a bird.
The pigeon would love it.
The real owner of this space is going to cut my head off in a second. Okay, last one. Molly Maguire's restaurant, band, or documentary?
That's a documentary.
It sounds like a restaurant to me.
It could also be a band, though.
All three.
A bar.
Nathan, you win the whole game. It is all three. It is a band, a restaurant, and a documentary.
Wow. The Molly Maguires were a radical union group in Northumberland, in Northeast PA.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of thinking, why would a documentary be named?
Oh, there's a lot to cover.
You'll love it. The Molly Maguires, 20 of them were hung in the 1880s in Sunbury on like trumped up charges about, and it was all the sort of anti-labor Pinkertons, all that stuff.
They were hanged. Just sorry to be that.
Oh, hanged. Thank you. I never remember. Awesome. I didn't keep track of score. Did anyone? It doesn't really matter.
I got two right.
Nathan. Well, Nathan.
Oh, but Nathan got all three.
Does the last one count?
Yeah, did that count for three?
Yeah, the last one wins it no matter what your score is. The last one was worth a million points. So excellent. We will get the post-production on this done. Thank you so much, Chantel, for coming on and sharing so much of your life story.
Thanks for coming on.
The part we didn't record, I don't know if it'll make it on, but we had some really interesting ideas about how to combine taking out the grass industry and making marijuana legalized. So okay, check out Chantel's Leon Block. Take care, everybody.
Travel ever had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Belfont, Southmont, Westmont, Womelsdorf, Nordmont, Dormont, Lebanon, Holmesworth, Cedar Springs, Boeing Springs, Chess Springs, Centerbridge, Centersport, Leesport, Williamsport, Brackenridge, Lumber City, Central City, Lake City, Clearfield, Westfield, Wentfield, Richfield, big deal. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I crossed the Allen's Fair, man. I be the mountain air, man. Travel ever had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Glen, Wilpen, Tunnelton, Conestoga, Bakerton, Curry Run, Smoke Run, Sanatoga, Slickville, Smithville, Flicksville, Maxtoni, Youngwood, Edgewood, Hopwood, Punxsutawney, Whitehall, Blue Ball, Center Hall, North Apollo, Delano, Renovo, Laredo, let's go. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valley's fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel ever had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Been to Stump Creek,
Penns Creek, Pine Creek, Chambersburg, Middle Creek, Blakeslee, Falls Creek, Shepherdsburg, Johnstown, Allentown, Shepherdstown, Lords Valley, Daisytown, Doylestown, Downingtown, Cherry Valley, Plain Grove, Mill Grove, Mechanics Grove, Swissvale, Ferndale, Carbondale, Monongahela, oh well, I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the atmosphere, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.